Hello, the internet, and welcome to Season 28, Episode 2 of Der Daily Zeitgeist!
Yeah.
For April 24th, 2018, my name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Baked Potatoes O'Brien.
Ooh.
That is courtesy of Chris Oily?
That's an elevation.
That is referring back to my homespun heating pad remedy that I bestowed on you guys yesterday. You just boil or nuke a potato. It retains its heat better than a warm washcloth. Just trying to give you guys $1 million worth of game for free 99. And I am thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
Yes, it's the one they call John Bon Jovi or Bon Iver. Thank you for that, a.k.a. from new a.k.a. maker, Christy Yamaguchi Main. Thank you for that one. Great a.k.a.
Good handle.
And also, it is April 24th, also known as April Xanchors in Armenian, meaning April 24th, which marks the beginning of the Armenian genocide. Now, there are a lot of people marching in L.A. This is kind of a close thing to me because I have many Armenian friends. My godson is Armenian. And I know that the governments of Turkey and the United States are still not recognizing the genocide of the Armenian people in Turkey. So again, shout outs to y'all and shout out to Hayastan.
And we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by one of the all-time great, hilarious stand-up comedian, Caitlin Gill.
I've never given myself such a cool intro. I was pretty proud.
She just caught a live chicken in our studio.
I would be pretty proud if I'd done that as well.
Yeah.
I gave myself a hot intro and caught a chicken.
And
what a morning.
I saw you beating the shit out of a side of beef earlier outside the street, so
Just gotta stay ready. Gotta stay ready. That is I, Caitlin Gill.
Caitlin, what is something from your search history that is revealing about who you are?
I had to look up X-Men movie with Sansa in it. Because I have lost track of X-Men movies.
Yes.
And I came across one on HBO.
First Class? Is that the one?
I think there's one after First Class.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like,
Days of Future.
I did look it up. Like, I hit go, and then I saw the result and was like, still don't know what this... I watched the movie, and I still don't know what that movie was.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of young X-Men running around, and one of them is Sansa Stark.
Was that
also has a name that isn't Sansa Stark, but until the end of the next season, or the continuation of this final season, I'm not going
to
know what it is.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure
you still have to wait, three more years for it to come out?
Right. Pretty sure the name of that movie is X-Men Babies, they come.
X-Men Baby Bosses. Bossy Baby X-Men.
Is that a
X-Men.
Muppet Babies cover?
Muppet Babies reference.
That was one. What else do I got? Oh, Olympia and Rainier Beer. I drunkenly researched whether or not they have a rivalry. I did not complete that search, so I don't know. But I did type Olympia versus Rainier.
Washington Beers.
Washington Beers.
Yeah.
Yes. And it occurred to me in a Washington bar. I am recently returned, freshly back, last night, arrived from a Northwest trip. I was in Portland and Seattle for shows. I told jokes and it was fun. But I had to research their beer beef. And I don't know if there is any
I had Olympia for the first time like maybe 2 years ago. A friend of mine, Kevin Parker Flynn, shout out to you, from Kennewick, Washington. He was like, oh, they got the Olympias at this liquor store. I didn't know what the fuck they were. And I was like, oh, this is just, I like regional, just sort of regular beers because they don't taste very different to me.
No.
Except for the can. But I'm like, oh, this is what y'all drink up there. And I'm like, it tastes like
exactly
pretty
the same.
Standardly good beer.
It tastes like beer.
I'm also not a hop head, so I don't have discerning taste when it comes to beer either.
I feel
like
that's a family of beer that is like brewed to have no distinguishing flavor.
Yeah.
It's meant to be as palatable and approachable as possible.
Just sipping beer. Yeah.
But I wanted
Washington
to see if there was like
general,
a... No, just that class of like light, tasty lager. Cheap, you know, your Budweiser's, et cetera.
Right.
If Bud gets mad at your podcast, I'm very sorry. But I wanted to see if there was a head clash between the light beers of Washington.
To be determined.
Still don't know.
Yeah.
TBD,
I just want to shout out National Bohemia, Natty Bo. That's another regional beer that I was put onto, and I was like, okay, I like the names that people have for it. So
Montucky Cold Snack, baby. Can't beat Portland's finest, weirdest malty beer.
What is that called?
Montucky Cold Snack.
Okay,
listen,
Montucky
I don't understand any why any one of those words is the name of the beer, but it's a cool can.
Okay, I like that.
Pony on it.
Yeah.
That's a fucking cool name.
Isn't it?
What is something that's underrated?
Underrated? Yes. I feel like I wrote down prescription sunglasses, and then I was trying to remember if I said that last time I was here. And even if I did, I stand by it.
Okay.
All right.
I don't recall you saying that.
We're doing underrated, right?
Yes.
Okay, good. Because they are most certainly not overrated. Underrated, they're just an investment you don't make in yourself, and then you have them, and it changes your life for the better in a way that you didn't know you needed, but honey, you do.
Right. My eyesight is just good enough that I only wear glasses when I go to the movies or I'm driving at night and stuff. So I've never known.
Don't cheat yourself.
I've never known the pain of tossing on the glasses, and I can't see very well. But I guess it's true. Yeah, if I had those on, I would see the trees and
everything. Yeah, you get to see leaves. Trees have leaves. They're not sort of just green amorphous shapes. And like those signs on the street have words on
them. Yeah, which is crazy. I think the first time I got my glasses, I felt like I was cheating myself.
Right.
I was like, yo, I forgot about leaves.
Yeah, it's
because
exactly
I was like the kind of shit you see, like, man, was I just going the last like 8 years? Not
with
noticing the leaves.
Yeah,
like, right. Exactly. Like 8-bit
just looked
video,
like shit Super Mario
exactly,
trees.
Like it came out of Minecraft or some shit.
Yeah, yours is more timely, more up to date.
Well, look, I like to stay relevant to the kids.
When you guys first started wearing glasses, did colors seem more vibrant
yes.
to you?
I don't see color.
It's weird.
it is weird.
That's a problem.
Make a
difference. That's called color blindness.
Yes, it is.
It's actually a genetic thing.
Yeah. I see race, though, for sure. But yes, the primary colors I'm very, very bad at.
I don't know why that is. And I've tried to ask people why the colors seemed more vibrant once I could see things more distinctly. And
it's got
to
be some information your brain was like struggling to fill in before where now it's like, oh, this is easy.
They
that's a lot of green.
It. Yeah.
So you've worn glasses your whole life, Caitlin?
No, I got lucky. My folks both did from when they were little tiny kids. And then I didn't need them until I was much later and realized that driving shouldn't give normal people a headache. And you can usually tell what signs say from far away. So,
and then with the revelation of prescription eyeglasses, before were you just kind of having sunglasses on and being like just squinting mad hard, or like would you ever put like the eyeglasses and then put the sunglasses over?
I have done both, but for many years when I just didn't have glasses when I probably need them, I just shaded up my blind ass eyes and hit the road. So apologies to the fellow motorists of California. For several years I was ignorant as to my own
we're safe. We're
need
all
for
here
glasses
now.
But I bought a pair of prescription sunglasses. It's the most adult purchase I've ever made, and I own a car, so
it's
the best thing. Do it, go get them. They're underrated. You want them, believe me.
You got me thinking about
you got that
sunglasses
FSA
now.
Money I don't even know what that means, but I think you have to spend it in a certain amount of time.
Right
get the sunnies.
Fortunately, during that period you were the only bad driver in California. So what is something, Caitlin, that is overrated?
Deviled eggs.
Wow.
Get out, deviled eggs.
What a
go home.
That take, I have to take my sweatshirt
you're
off.
You're an egg.
It's
you're
hot
an
in here.
Egg with more eggy stuff blended into the middle of the egg. It is the fussiest dish that you are not transforming in the least. Just put paprika on a hard-boiled egg and let's not pretend it's a party dish. I just don't like them personally.
Are you not an egg fan at all?
I had to learn how to like eggs, so no. I'm not offering me just an egg.
You learned to love the bomb.
Yes.
What do you mean you had to learn to like?
I didn't like them at all when I was a kid.
Just through repetition, you're
as
like,
as a grown
fine.
Up, I was like, it is unacceptable to not like eggs. You live in a world where I travel a lot. I'm just going to have to eat an egg sometimes.
Yeah.
It's you can't pick them off your sandwiches Starbucks.
I love deviled eggs.
I
just like boiled
Starbucks
eggs.
Problem now.
I
still went. I only have been once, and I've been on the road, and that feels like I made a major sacrifice, and that's terrible.
Yeah,
I should
well,
be working
look,
a lot hard for social justice.
Ever since, they changed their app to like when you had to re up, it used to be $10. Now they're adding $25 at a time.
Oh, come on!
You know I got some money
I'm
I
out.
Gotta spend in there. Then you know, I mean, really, I just do it for the cold brew. But you know, now you know people are putting me on to different kinds of cold brew. I might start making my own.
Yeah, it's really easy. We can talk about that.
Yeah,
that is underrated.
Yes.
But deviled eggs are gross, and you just cut them up, and then you do all the fussy stuff. You have to be fussy. You have to pull out just the yolk, and then you blend it around with like mayo, as I understand, which is an egg-based product.
Right.
You're just putting more
so
egg
eggy.
In your eggs.
I just feel like it's egg-shaped egg salad. It's like
it's just not fully chopped up.
Why would you ask your poor loving relative to finicky, fussily pop out a bunch of fluffy egg yolks?
Yeah, it's funny because I remember loving them, and I was like, you know what? I'm gonna make some. Then I tried making them, and that was the closest. I was like, man, fuck these deviled eggs.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like piping out yolk in a into a thing. I'm like, why am I
hard pass?
It's all about the presentation. When really, as you say, Jack, I really would just eat a fucking bucket of egg salad, and we really achieve the same thing.
I feel like they are like a relic from those weird 70s or 50s. Cooking like the wild recipes of like banana hollandaise roasts.
So
you know?
Gross.
What is that?
Banana ham hollandaise.
That's
is
a thing.
An actual
what?
Recipe. We did an article on this at Cracked where somebody went back and like eBayed a bunch of cookbooks from like the 50s and 60s.
Oh, shit. Okay.
And like they were super into mixing like fruit with ham and hollandaise sauce. And they were, everything was Jell-O. Like
all of it was Jell-O.
Yeah, they would be like a roast beef inside Jell-O.
Yes.
Oh, like ham salad with Jell-O in
it
or something?
Like I heard they were just all about mixing things with Jell-O because Jell-O, I guess, had just been invented. It was like considered the food of the future or something.
I mean, Jell-O's been around for a minute. I don't know why it has these food renaissances where it's like we're fascinated by suspending things in it. Like, no, that's not an appetizing. That's never looked good.
I've heard
But I feel like deviled eggs just weaseled their way out from that era where we were like, yeah, just slice four apples and then you put, what you do is you put a steak on each one of them and then you melt a gooey cheese. I don't know. That sounded better.
Now it's a Gruyere
steak
apple.
Honestly, that one sounded better.
Yeah, that was actually really good.
I feel like deviled eggs belong in the same book. Cut the egg, pull out the middle of the egg, whip it with more egg, and then put it back.
Sort of
in
like
the
a twice baked potato kind of thing where you just
Well, those are delicious. So let's not start that.
See, they're, twice baked potatoes are amazing.
I know. I'm not saying they're bad, but it's the same process, right? You're halving a potato. You're gutting it, and then you're just reintroducing it with some more stuff.
Yep.
And I love, look, I'm
now,
a, I'll,
it would
I'll
be
love
the
potatoes.
Same if you were taking that potato, scooping it out, and then mixing it with a potato-based product, and then putting it back in the potato. The twice-baked gets cheese, garlic chive. That gets action.
Bacon, that's
that's
true.
That's good stuff.
That would be funny.
So then maybe we just need to elevate the deviled egg a little bit.
So I take the egg, or I take the inside of the potato out, I mix it with mashed potatoes, and then it's like, wait, what the fuck?
Wait, hold on.
I'm wrong, but deviled eggs are terrible.
Yeah.
No, you don't have to say you're wrong. You know,
it's fine. People like them. I watch them, eat them, and enjoy them. So I understand that some people get it, but I don't get it.
I think one of the most underrated things is how much better food has gotten, like in the last 100 years, basically.
Fucking 20 years.
Yeah, like people's fingers were in your like ground up beef past. Yeah.
I am so about people's hands. I'm so weirded out and grossed out
love
by
to eat people's
the
hands.
Separated industrial food. Only machines have touched my food. That's more appealing than some farmer's hands. Right. I'll take the hands.
Even there's the wild fingernail in there too.
But they used to like put such weird chemicals in there and we just think, well, it was the olden days, so it was more natural, but it was like they could get away with putting whatever the fuck they wanted in there.
So, right.
Like there was just no regulation.
Yeah, because I look at like pictures of my dad and his friends back in the day. I'm like, how did everybody have a six pack?
Is everybody tall?
And they're like, we were just like moving around. It was different. It wasn't like we were eating like vegan or whatever.
Right.
It's like I just had a job where I was not sitting talking into a fucking microphone, son. And I was like, oh shit, all right.
Miles actually hasn't moved from his seat since yesterday's show.
I have not. And I haven't because I have a terrible stomach ache.
Yeah. Also, it's easier to be thin when the food is garbage.
Right.
When it's fucking hollandaise on a fucking banana.
Yeah, my dad was like, oh, yeah, the secret food was terrible.
Yeah, exactly.
It was poisonous. I lost many friends.
Caitlin, what's a myth? What's something people think is true that you know to be false?
Here's a myth. I found it. Okay. Comedians everywhere have started putting on some very funny shows with themes relating to getting comedians high. And I am a comedian who has been stoned with little interruption for approximately 24 years. So I am often recruited for these shows. And just as an advocate for comedians in general and for those who smoke the cannabis, you can't. We don't work. You got to get the unsuspecting ones. You can't get me high enough for your themes.
For you to act weird.
Yeah. The myth is that you can get me high enough to be funnier on your show than I would be if I was a regular kind of high. And you can't. I'm just the regular kind of high.
Yeah.
The crowd can get higher. Other comics can. Not me. I'm up here in the clouds. You all just join me.
Right.
I did a very fun show in Seattle where I promised the crowd that I would get high enough to explain my life philosophy. And I will confess that I did. But I didn't do it because I was stoned. I did it because I promised.
Right.
Just very workmanlike about getting high and
explaining. Like a very popular concept, even like when I was producing video, like it was like just add weed to this format,
exactly,
sort of a thing of like just get them high and do a show like that.
That
is
the myth I want to display. Adding weed to your format isn't gonna help.
Right.
It felt very specific until you made it broader, and I appreciate that. I thought I was dispelling a myth that applied only to me.
No, because I saw the same
thing. This is a much broader myth.
And I was something I wrestled with too, trying to make videos like that. Is that you have to really be conscious of who it is that's smoking because. You could be someone like you or I where they're like,
now
oh, maybe your eyes look different or whatever versus someone who's like, smoked weed 15 years ago and was like, whoa, you know, that's what they're looking for.
Yes.
Right.
Or that's the illusion that they think happens. And that doesn't happen. Right. When you get the person who hasn't smoked weed in 15 years high, they are afraid. And you need to comfort them away from the camera and the microphone. Right. They need your care now. Right. What are you doing?
Yeah, I think Jack Black maybe went on Getting Dug with High once and got like too high. And allegedly it was not entertaining. Everyone was like, is he okay?
No, no,
he's like,
not.
I'm dying of a heart attack.
You are fine and you are as stoned as you would have been for the show anyway.
Right.
Or you are making the crowd concerned for a start.
Yeah, and that's not a vibe you want where you're an audience member at a comedy show and you're like, oh my God, are they okay?
Oh my God, Jack Black seems like so much fun. Is he all right?
It's the opposite of the feeling you're going for to go to a comedy show. You want to go to laugh, not to be like, oh shit.
So just acknowledge that your comedians are probably already high. If they should be.
It's called
coping. Astute listeners will be like, but you guys just did that on 420 because Miles and our guest Josh smoked before our 420 episode.
How was it?
And it was
fine.
Purely ceremonial. Miles was not different at all.
Yeah.
It was just a way to honor the high holiday.
In the beginning,
I
pretended I wasn't as high in the beginning, but I told Jack after, it was like, the first 10 minutes.
I don't remember anything.
I mean, I know I was talking. And then I kept looking at Nick in the control room and being like, dude, no, he's going to bail me out and edit this so I sound right.
Yeah, he did. All your sentences were backwards. He just reversed the order. It was very strange. All right, let's get into format. We are trying to take a sample of the global/national shared consciousness, what people are thinking and talking about right now. So there are two tragedies that happened in the past couple of days. The Waffle House shooting on Sunday, I believe, and the Toronto van attack yesterday. And I was just amazed today because I went to the front of Drudge. I always like to check Drudge to see what conservatives are freaking out about. And neither of those stories was anywhere.
On the front page of Drudge?
Nowhere. Like, you couldn't find literally anything about it. You could find stuff about Kanye, you know, they photoshopped Trump's hair onto Kanye's head. So that's cool. But this is like bread and butter of anytime a Western country is attacked, anytime there's a mass shooting, it is everywhere. And I was trying to figure out, like, what happened? Where did these stories go? And I think it must be that they just forgot about them, I guess.
Come on, Jack. You know how to set yourself up better than that.
So the Toronto attack is being said to not be terror-related by the Canadian police who are investigating it.
Well, I think, were they calling it not even an attack, like an accident or whatever? Because they were saying that the
it's
guy
just
was
sheer
mentally
mental illness.
Yeah, was mentally ill. I mean, clearly, like, it was, by definition, he attacked people. But, yeah, I think in our minds, when we hear the word attack, we sort of instantly link it to some sort of terrorism or something like that. But it seemed very, at first, I think everyone's reaction was like, oh no, another person in a car trying to hit pedestrians. And I think the first idea was like, oh, this was probably a terror attack. But then when we saw the video of how this guy was apprehended, he was clearly sort of definitely not well and seemed like he was trying to induce the police into like shooting him. But I was really surprised at the restraint that the Toronto police had.
Yes.
Because I'm from America, where never seen restraint from police.
He would have been lit up like a Christmas tree if he had done that shit in anywhere south of the border.
Let's be clear.
And that's not a good thing.
Depending on what he looked like.
Right.
Yes. Yes, for sure. They're always
very
good
about the Waffle House.
So
they managed to arrest a naked man in a coat with a gun there.
Right.
So that's the other story, the Waffle House shooting.
Also not on Drudge.
Not on Drudge, nowhere to be seen. Not on the front of Breitbart anywhere.
Why, though, Jack? What are the facts that would make them avoid
it?
It
would seem like the story of the week for these sort of tabloidish news places, news outlets. It's a naked guy going in a trench coat and killing four people and then being disarmed by a heroic unarmed man who just like rushes forward and is pure John McClane. He is like,
yes,
he is John McClane distilled down to his like purest essence.
Yeah. Perfect. Like late act two, early act three essence.
Like. Just like, This is who I am. I've
would resolved
have done the same
to be the
thing.
Hero. Yes.
Like he mistakenly thinks I would have done the same thing. Which,
hearing him talk. Well, again, but you betrayed the details, Jack. It's because Drudge doesn't want to cover it because it was another white man with an AR-15 and he killed a bunch of people of color. Ooh, that's not the kind of shit he's trying to push on Drudge Report.
And the hero is also a person of color.
But yeah, this dude, and he's a fucking legit hero. This man, he even was using his platform to push like this GoFundMe page that he had started for the families of the victims of the shooters at a eulogy. He was just so adamant about saying, like, I just did what I felt I had to do. And it wasn't even that I was thinking of other people. Mm-hmm. It was just a reaction I had. So, just being so humble, it's really, like, it's crazy to see something like that. And something, like, so much that, like, encapsulates a definition of, like, a heroic act. Heroic act. And even the response to it is not, like, pumping his own dick up, being like, yeah, you know, I knew I had to do something, whatever. He's just like, I felt I had to do something.
You can nominate a hero. I forget what board does this, but there's a cool, like, otherwise, like a reputable organization that gives sort of hero grants at the end of every year where you can nominate someone for a heroic act, and there are specifics.
Uh-huh.
It's the Carnegie Hero Fund. You can actually nominate someone to be a hero as designated by the fund. They have a definition of a hero, and what I like about the Waffle House dude, I should know his name, James Shaw. Well done, James Shaw. I bet he would agree he's not a hero by this definition, and I love that. That is such heart. The definition, according to the Carnegie Hero Fund, is a candidate for the award must be a civilian who voluntarily risks his or her life to an extraordinary degree while saving or attempting to save the life of another person. And I love that this man has the perspective to know that he wanted to survive. And the fact that others survived is like a huge bonus.
Right.
But he acted out of that, or at least what I got out of what I heard him say, was that he acted to save himself and it was no thought, just went in and did it. I don't know. I'm moved by that perspective. I think he's an awesome guy. He didn't need a gun. Right. He doesn't need a gun.
He just needed to be a good man.
It's almost like a Dunning-Kruger effect of courage. It's like he's so courageous, he just assumes everybody else is.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I did that.
Well, anyone would have done it.
Wouldn't you guys have done that? It's like, yeah, yeah.
Who knows until you're in that situation.
We would have done it too.
Like you had no other agenda other than just fixing the situation.
Yeah.
Obviously they describe it better and I thought I could and then just didn't. But it's like a self-sacrificing act where you know you put yourself at risk and there is nothing to necessarily benefit you. And I heard him speak and say that he just wanted to survive. And
right.
I mean, that motivation to put yourself, I don't know, I would want to survive too and I would be fucking hiding.
Right.
So what it takes to put yourself out, you know, to act instead of to like not react, which is probably what I would do, take something heroic. Yeah, that's huge.
Yeah.
It's a big thing.
When that fight or flight came up, he said, fight.
Fight. That takes something. I don't know if I have it. I am thankfully, I have not been tested.
Yeah. Well, what's crazy is, you know, that the NRA was really, they had to figure out a way to spin this, you know, because they don't want to hear about a good guy without a gun.
Right.
This is amazing.
Right. Yeah. Let's get the audio from, so the NRA covered this heroic act on their channel, NRA TV, but then they had a quibble with his decision to go into a Waffle House unarmed.
Yeah.
There would have been many people dead inside that Waffle House if it wasn't for James Shaw. Now, what's amazing to me is that critics of the NRA are quick to use James Shaw as some kind of a strange example as to why guns aren't needed. I saw this flying around Twitter and social media over the weekend. First off, politicizing this event before it's even over, well, clearly that's the new norm for the left. But I look at Shaw as a hero. I say thank you. I say may God bless him. And the fact is, without a gun, his bravery is even more impressive to me. He stopped the crime. Yes, he saved lives. Yes. But to me, the story still proves that if anyone had a gun there, including James Shaw, the attack would be over. There would be no manhunt going on right now. Instead, we have a city on lockdown.
What the fuck? They keep pushing the goddamn goalposts back every fucking time. Like, well, yeah, he saved. But what about these lockdowns? He didn't stop the lockdown.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it was not enough.
There's no lockdown. That's not a thing. There's nobody closing your streets. Like, the Waffle House on the other side of town was still open.
Yes.
Like, that's,
well, Waffle House always stays open.
Yeah, that's exactly. They don't have locks. I just don't understand that. I've never come anywhere close to being able. Usually I can understand what somebody's trying to tell me when we don't agree. And that whole thing that, like, everyone in that Waffle House should have been loaded. It's like,
right.
What?
Right.
Yeah.
What?
And also, it's an important detail of the story that he disarmed the guy. He got the gun away from him and then threw it over the counter because he didn't want to murder somebody. Because that's just not where he was. And they're like, see, he would have killed him if he had the chance.
It's
I don't know, man. It's such a terrifying separation from one of our founding principles that makes this crazy experiment so magical. We don't just get to kill each other because we did a no-no. You can't just shoot someone because they're carrying a gun. We really can't do that. We have a mechanism. We have a whole machine that we set up to handle this. The fact that we've corrupted it with private prisons and bad shit is our fault.
Right,
but the basic idea is that you throw the gun and you tackle the guy. That's sort of just a principle you got to deal with.
Right.
There's no amount of guns that fixes that. I cannot imagine the scenario that plays out in a person with that perspective's mind. What they see happening in that Waffle House.
Right.
Naked guy jacket, two people shot outside, door flies open. Your reaction is to
reach for a loaded weapon
you came to Waffle House with.
Right.
And then aim precisely among a screaming throng of running people to hit the That's crazy.
But I guess, because so many of these like opinions that they have or conclusions that they come to are so divorced from the reality of the situation that it's easy to just say like reflexively, if there was a gun there, then there'd be no, let's see. So he did stop the guy. So what's the next worst thing? Well, there would be no manhunt.
Yeah.
So
it's the same ridiculous perspective that lets Trump say that he would run into that building to save people even if he wasn't. Yeah.
Right, because he'll never have to be in that situation.
Honey, you've never been in that situation, and you can't deal with the reality that, no, you weren't. I just told you I wouldn't. It's not something I'm proud of. Wish I was the person who'd tackle a shooter. I'm not.
Maybe one of history's biggest cowards, too. So it's, I bet he honestly believes that. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back, and just real quick, we actually have late breaking news because we're doing this a little earlier than normal. We just had a story added to the doc by our writer on the ground in Toronto, Mr. J.M. McNabb. He lives in Toronto, and he was pointing out that, you know, even though racists on Twitter were quick to call the attacker a terrorist or a jihadist and blame the city's Muslim population, people who looked at his Facebook post before they were taken down found that he had lauded Elliot Rodger, the California shooter from 2014 who raged about a number of women turning down his advances. He also used the word incels, meaning involuntary celibate. He said, quote, "The incel rebellion has already begun. We will overthrow all the Chads and Stacys." Tucker Carlson just had the hardest time understanding how the government of Canada could say there was, quote, "no connection to a jihadi group." This makes a lot more sense because I was thinking, even if there was an absence of motive, even if it was just mental illness, they would still speculate that he was motivated by ISIS or could be. They would fill that motive in. They did that with the Vegas shooter, for instance, because we like never figured out what he was on about. And in this case, they just like completely disappeared the story. And I think it's because his politics were this sort of weird sort of
men's rights kind of shit of like blame women for their own shittiness kind of mentality, which aligns perfectly with the alt-right.
Yeah.
Which is crazy, though, too, because Chads are like
the handsome alt-right.
The peak alt-right male you could be. So even the fact that he's like, he is clearly so on the incel side that he can't look at anybody who has like some kind of sex life or social life.
Yeah, I don't think it's red and blue. I think they're taking a different red pill, blue pill situation.
Right, exactly.
That is a fascinating and so sad world with broken, lonely people. There's nothing involuntary about your celibacy. What's involuntary is the self-examination, the tiny changes you would have to make to progress as a person, to not get fucked, dude, but to connect with other humans on a physical and emotional level.
So there you go.
You are not doing work. You're just not doing the work. You'll get a sandwich made for you if you do the work. People make you sandwiches because they love you. Sorry, I just...
So speaking of connecting or failing to connect with other human beings, we wanted to talk about, and you'll find out why that is speaking of later on in this segment, but we wanted to talk about narcissistic personality disorder. So
why? Why? Is it because I'm here? Why?
A year and a half ago, there was a point during the 2016 election where Trump was really starting to become like a major candidate. And it was at the same time that Kanye was having some manner of breakdown. And we did an episode of the Cracked Podcast just on narcissistic personality disorder, basically comparing Kanye and Trump and basically saying they seem to have very similar interior lives with basically being purely narcissistic creatures. And Miles, you last night basically came to that exact same conclusion on your own.
Even though you accused me of copying you.
Yes.
Immediately you're like, yeah, I did a crack podcast fam.
So I just wanted to get that in there.
As I was having a fever dream. No, I just realized there are so many parallels because, you know, obviously Kanye over the weekend was just tweeting weird shit. He said he liked Candace Owens. He was basically clearly showing that he was in a mindset of like that he was starting to philosophically align with like the alt-right. Not that literally he was, but the names he was bringing up and the concepts he was talking about were enough for the alt-right to immediately jump and be like, oh, we're claiming Kanye now. And so that had everyone confused. And a lot of time I was like, man, like what the fuck is he doing? Like, is it promo for his album? Because he's got an album coming out. Does he really believe this? And then I was like,
did
wait.
Did he watch Bay at Coachella? Is he losing his mind right
exactly.
now?
Exactly. And like clearly Kendrick wins a Pulitzer, so now he's live tweeting a book. Right. I'm like, bro, that's not how you get a Pulitzer. But anyway, and then I was like, this whole love of Trump, like it's been happening for a minute. And then I was like, wait, let's think about it. They're both terrible business people. Like I know Kanye lost a lot of money with his fashion line and shit like that. Trump is, we already know about how bad his business practices are.
Right.
Like his properties have been total disasters. I remember like when the first couple Yeezy fashion shows, people were like, this fashion show's a fucking joke.
Right.
Like we were wearing shoes that are like way too small. People were falling over. They're wearing clothes that weren't even part of the line.
His version of fundraising is tweeting at Mark Zuckerberg and asking him for $20 million,
exactly.
I think.
Well, does that work?
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
They both don't read.
Right.
Their egos are both insanely fragile. They both have their fans thinking they're playing 4D chess. They're not.
Exactly.
You know, where like, so I was saying with Trump, you know, we've talked about how for people who are not wealthy, Trump is like this gaudy version of wealth that some people do aspire to because
right.
it's like, it's so like, you're like, oh, that's called money
yeah.
right there.
He's
and
a
that's
homeless
what we
man's
like.
Version of a rich guy.
Right.
Yeah.
And exactly. And Kanye is like a not cool person's version of the coolest man on earth.
Right.
Now, not to say that every Kanye fan worships him because he's so cool. A lot of people are Kanye fans because of his music. There's a very distinct section of Kanye stans who dress exactly like him, where he can do no wrong. Everything he does is a God move. He's nine moves ahead of everyone. And again, that's because of the perception thing. So that's another very similar thing. They were both flamed by Barack Obama. Clearly Trump, we can definitely point to Obama's words and definitely being a motivating factor for him. But also, I remember when Kanye took the stage and did the whole, like, oh, Beyonce had the greatest album of all time thing to Taylor Swift. Barack Obama was like, yeah, he's a jackass. And I remember that was like a big thing. And Kanye even talked about how he was like, I fuck with Trump because he's real. And like, I could meet with him. I could never heard from Obama. Or I could never hear back from Obama. So he's still very like kind of salty about that. And they both are, they're masters of media manipulation and getting what they need to out of social media or just playing the paparazzi or the tabloids. They know how to do it. And I was like, damn. Maybe we just need to start accepting the fact that these two dudes are from the same fucking planet. One just happens to be black, the other happens to be white, and one is just better at like what he does as a musician than the other person. But aside from everything else, they're so fucking similar that I'm like, oh, can I be mad at him? Because everything was there the whole time.
Right. Like, he's now retweeting Scott Adams, the Dilbert guy.
Yeah, what the fuck?
Yeah, I think that this is another example of basically this personality disorder that all three of these men happen to have, narcissism, where you're like empty on the inside and need to fill your emptiness with the adulation of others and
wealth or external items.
And when people aren't paying attention to you, you start panicking and you know have to fill the hole in your inside you with
that is
with
part
their
of it.
Attention.
And we see it, sorry, with both in Trump and Kanye, you see this the acceleration that they're trying to fill a hole, but it's not a hole, it's like a vortex, it's a
right.
pit. There's nothing
right.
you can't
yeah,
put anything
it's
in
a
it.
Black hole.
So as big as your world gets, you still feel exactly the
right.
same way.
Stay hungry.
Yes.
Yeah.
yeah. You're
yeah.
really hungry. You're
yeah,
starving.
Yeah, yeah.
You're emaciated. It's not right. looking good for
it's
you.
It's a horrible, horrible personality disorder yeah. to have people who have it are way more likely to commit suicide because, you know, it's just
murder.
There's no deep happiness. There's no connection with other people. And I just think that because of the way that our society and, you know, social media and our media landscape have evolved, this just happens to be, just accidentally, people with this personality disorder basically have the Konami code to our society. They just right. accidentally are now like perfectly built for this. Like Trump just is perfectly built. His personality disorder makes him constantly tweet and constantly like draw attention to himself and just need to stay in the headlines. Kanye is the same way. Like, the thing that made him probably the most famous was when he did that thing with Taylor Swift and like
that
main, jumped up
yeah,
on
people
stage.
Were like, who the fuck? Every, people were like, who the fuck is Kanye?
Everybody knew his name. Yeah. Right. I mean, they are benefiting from the fact that, you know, all publicity is good publicity, not because they're playing 4D chess, but because they happen to have this personality disorder that is just the Konami code of our modern society.
Right.
Yeah, but it's only a code if your player then gets to go in and destroy the entire game.
Right.
Like, it's not like you beat the game, you ruin it. You're not playing it anymore.
Right.
Yes.
And that's what makes...
I guess the Konami code to instant
to
celebrity.
Yes.
Yes.
That,
yeah,
I think
it,
that's
yes.
what we should say, yeah.
And it's amazing to watch it play out in government because the whole way that that life perspective works, I mean, mental disorder combined with, like, kind of loving the effects of it, watching a Trump storm happen, like... When that kind of thing seeps its way into government, when you have a Trump doing that, like, the game's important. You actually have to play it. There's a reason we built it that way. So we're watching this dude just like try to game the system by not playing the game. And I make my own rule and it doesn't work.
Yeah.
It's not working.
Right.
From a fundamental governing level, it doesn't work.
Right.
And I think like in the Kanye case, like, I'm fashion. I'm going to make fashion. No, a fashion show is shoes that are the right size.
Right.
And like a staff that has water bottles in the back for everybody because they're fucking thirsty. And
right,
like, you know, a venue that you rented properly.
Not
and
having
all that
people
shit.
Pass out on Governor's Island.
Yeah,
or whatever
that's
that was.
Probably a bad idea.
Yeah.
It's the, yeah.
So for people who aren't aware of who Scott Adams is, he's the dude who created Dilbert. And he has become sort of the spokesperson for basically this type of person. He was on to Trump immediately that he was going to be a success. He was like, he sees through the matrix, basically,
right?
Like I do.
Men's and rights activist, too.
So reading his analysis, so he did a video, like a live stream on Twitter, where he was basically giving us his analysis of why Kanye is the man and like why he fits within this Trumpian worldview. And it's basically a purely like will to power type thing, idea of success and ethics. You're like right if you're affecting reality and not being controlled by other people. But the problem with it is that you are viewing other people as objects. And so you never make a connection with other people. And that's a great way to go insane. Like Nietzsche went crazy. Scott Adams, who is this guy who like speaks to people like he has figured out the world and like knows how to levitate, actually at a certain point, like after Dilbert became hugely successful, he stopped being able to speak to people.
What do you mean, like he was medically unable to?
Yeah, like psychologically unable
right.
to. Like doctors wow. examined his vocal cords. They were like, what's happening? And it was just a mental condition. And it seems like it's this spasm of like not being able to connect with other people. He could speak to a crowd. He could speak like in front of a crowd. He could speak in the mirror to himself. He couldn't speak in conversation to other people.
Wow.
And then like he eventually like figured out how to get out of this trap that he was in. But that's something I'm reading a book right now about how human interaction and relationships are actually a huge part of mental health. And all of these guys seem to have this model of the world where you can't connect with other people because that like makes you too vulnerable. And
right.
so, and that's becoming more and more like psychiatric theories are emerging that this is like a big reason for depression and anxiety is like not actually being able to connect with people.
The harder that the like personality types like that push and the farther they go and rise, I mean, this is simplistic and maybe I'm just empathizing the wrong way, but the more I see just like the saddest kid inside.
Right.
Like, you know,
no,
it's like
tragic.
There's a defining moment somewhere between like 5 and 8 years old where like you needed something, that hug, that comfort, that moment, that connection. It didn't happen. It's like a neural pathway or a synapse or something that just won't ever turn correct again. And you spend your life thirsty for this need. I think that it's nature or nurture. I think there are people who are genuinely born with narcissistic personality disorder. And I think there's also people who are formed early that just can't get out of these traps wherein you cannot connect with others.
Right.
You
right.
know, there's bars between you and other people. You put them there, you can take them out, but
right.
it takes a lot of work, and not everybody has the help and resources to do that. But especially with Trump, like, I just see a whiny, angry kid. Like, there's a, it's like a tantrum yeah. in a supermarket.
And it just looks weird
all
because
the time.
You're still 5 years old, but your body is just turning
exactly.
older, and it looks weird.
And all you want is for us to pick you up and hug you, but the closer we get, the more you're going to make it hard for us because you want it to be as hard as it can to like you. Like, you know, it's just the...
Yeah.
Right.
It like, you know, no, you don't like me. Yes, I do. No, I'm going to make it even more impossible for you to like me. No, we still, like, it's
yeah.
this race against, I don't understand it. And sometimes it feels crazy cool art, and Kanye makes great albums, and then Kanye is still
yeah,
a,
and he, well, he's
like,
still a fuckboy. And he does shit like this, and then he doesn't realize how dangerous it is that if he's maybe doesn't understand what Candace Owens is really about, because clearly, they, you know, they were saying it was based off this video where she was speaking at UCLA, just talking about, like, Black people have a mentality of victimization where some people are dead set on victimizing themselves by looking at the past and not looking towards the future or whatever. And Kanye, I think something resonated with that with him where I think he just saw it as like, is it a victor mentality or victim mentality?
Right.
And he's like, that's why I'm trying to break the code or whatever. But not realizing people who are talking about the past as people of color, we don't bring up the past because we're whining about it. Like, we're not trying to put in the work or we like that there's no progress. We have to acknowledge that the system is set up this way. So we have to acknowledge the imbalance because, unfortunately, white people are the only people that can balance the scale of equality in this country because Black people are not at the levers to actually right the ship. So when we bring this stuff up, like how there's income inequality or the incarceration rates are completely lopsided, it's not because we're like, wah, wah, wah. It's like, we need y'all to help us out do something. This is not a victim thing. If you want us to pull ourselves up by the bootstraps, you have to acknowledge that we might not have been playing the game at a level playing field from the beginning.
1,000%.
So for Kanye to do this, he's giving all these people on the alt-right, they're saying like, because they love a person of color that will just cross paths with them that they can use to be like, see, this is our attack dog now against this way of thinking or this kind of discourse. And be like, well, Kanye thinks, yeah, y'all got to come out of this victim mentality.
And the irony is, I am a white woman, the most victim-y culture of all. Like,
right.
You want it, victor or like victim comes down to like how you respond when someone gets your Starbucks order wrong. Like,
right,
there's a,
right.
like you said it, that recognizing historical inequities is so different from taking on the personality of being the eternal victim. And if it was the same, it, like, Donald Trump thinks he's in a witch hunt. Are you
right.
fucking crazy? You're leader of the free world. You just still have to be the victim. You
right.
have to be, like, Kanye is, like, writing a book on Twitter because someone else achieved something.
Right.
He's in this full panic. It's just a weird, victor or victim is yours. That's in your noggin. That
right.
doesn't, that can be informed by your historical circumstances, I'm sure.
Right.
But it has nothing to do with recognizing history and your place in
yeah.
it. It is up to you. Kanye stealing an award from some other lady because he thinks some other lady should have won it.
Right.
Like, honey, you have problems with feeling like a victim. Even when
right.
things aren't happening to you.
And maybe that's Kanye realizing this.
Great.
And he's trying to switch that. He's like, man,
maybe I'm
self-victimizing all the time. Maybe I need to switch my perspective. And I don't know, like, you know, many people are trying to rationalize, well, he doesn't get what he's actually saying.
But he's playing 4D chess and he's
yeah,
nine
and it's like, dude, I don't know. I think really we might have to acknowledge the fact that he's just an ignorant person.
Right.
And we've had this problem with our celebrity worship in this country that we just think because you're a celebrity, there's no way you could be ignorant or completely fucked up. Why would you be a celebrity? You
right.
know what I mean? That you,
why would I worship you?
Yeah,
why would
I
think you're better
you?
Than
yeah,
me?
Yeah, no, you're a celebrity because clearly celebrities only get there because like, I don't know if people
the
think there's a vetting
goal,
process though where it's like, well, the people who are celebrities that have millions of followers, they're not problematic, so you can take whatever they say as gospel.
Isn't that kind of a crazy thing about Trump, though, when the joke is like, well, I guess anybody can be president. Like, I think we do move through the world assuming there are gatekeepers. And I think
right.
that it takes part of a, there's something nice about having a screw loose that's like, I'm just walking right through this gate.
Like, right,
and, it, you know, the rest of us in the flock of sheep are standing around like, could you just walk through the gate?
Yeah.
Like, did you see him just walk through? You
they're
just
like,
walk through the gate.
There
like,
wasn't somebody by the gate.
Yeah.
But you have to have, like, that lunatic confidence to just do it. Just,
I mean,
like, walk by.
It
yeah.
helps. You
right.
don't have to.
Well, this is the same reason why the Vikings were so effective when they stepped on the scene in Europe, because they would pull up to churches and there'd be monks there and they have all this gold inside, and the Vikings are like,
Oh, okay, we're taking that.
Yeah, where other people are like, well, no, that's the church. That, yeah, we wouldn't dare steal from the church. The Viking's like, I don't know what the fuck church is,
bro. Did you just say dare?
Yeah.
Because I'm going in.
I see a bunch of weak-ass monks and a ton of gold. I got this fucking axe. Pull up.
Yeah.
And I'm going to take your shit. And that's the kind of the same thing of like, these people are coming into a world where the rules, they don't even see the structure.
Yeah.
And they're like, nope, I want that. Oh, there's rules? Not that I know of.
Yeah. And it's kind of this perfect storm where their success is fed by this problem they have, but the more success they get, the less likely they are to admit that they have the problem and that their success is, you know, based on basically being lucky enough to have the right personality defect for the time in which they were born.
And having it be profitable to others instead of costly to others.
Right.
Because the reality is, if people weren't profiting, if Michael Cohen didn't need to wash Ukrainian mob money, Donald Trump would be bankrupt and living in a hotel, not like the basement of his old hotel.
Right.
Like, if, you know, people around you can benefit from this mania that, like, you know, it depends on where the wind blows. Because otherwise you're like, you don't have any help or care, and you're a naked incel shooting up a Waffle House.
Right.
I see a straight line between the two.
Right.
And that line is whether or not you're profitable or costly.
Right. All right. Yeah. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back.
I never left.
Oh.
But we wanted to continue with Trump's mental illness, because there was an article in the Washington Post in the past week from the former reporter who wrote the Forbes 400 list back in the early 80s, who first put Trump on the list of the 400 richest people in America. And the first time that he put Trump on the list was because he got a call from a Trump employee named John Barron. We're going to listen to audio from that call.
Wait, okay, never
so,
mind.
Yeah, I mean, listen to our mentally ill president whenever pretend to be somebody
else.
Yeah,
whenever you hear there's a call from anyone named John, is always Trump. I love
John
it.
John Barron, because John Rich guy would have been too.
What was the other one he said when he talked about
John Duke?
When he talked about Marla Maples, what was it when he's talking to a tabloid? He used a name John something, too.
He pretended to be Marla Maples. He was like, hey, Marla, I good at sex? And then he was like, yes, you're the best I've ever had.
Yeah, did you hear
like,
that?
See?
Proof.
And
I'm not impotent.
The New York Post knew that that would sell the shit out of a newspaper and printed it. But anyways, so here is audio of the call that got Donald Trump to be known as a rich person. This is 1982. This is when people started to think that he was rich.
Well, let me tell you what the deal is, just so you understand.
Okay.
Mr. Trump bought, first of all, most of the assets have been consolidated to Mr. Trump, you know, because you have Dan Fred Trump, and I'd like to talk to you off the record if I can, just to make your thing easier.
Okay, sure.
Is that all right?
Yeah, that's fine.
All right, but I think you can really use Donald Trump now, and you can just consolidate. I think last year somebody showed me the article, and I think you had 200 and 200. And really, it's been pretty well consolidated now for the most part. As I also think somebody had mentioned that you had asked about that, or somebody had, and it's been pretty well consolidated, okay?
Uh-huh.
So that's one point that you can...
Does Freshman make money management decisions?
Oh, yeah, sure. He's the chairman, Donald's the president, and Fred Trump is active. He's an excellent guy, and you know how they're very close. The relationship of the two is, as you know, very close, as you've heard or know, or perhaps you don't know. But Fred Trump is active in the business, too.
So he's basically saying they've consolidated all the power under Donald,
right.
And, you know, that he basically owns the company at this point, which was not true. He actually at that time was worth roughly $5 million, but they included him on the list at $100 million.
Because it's consolidated.
Right, because it's all consolidated.
Yeah.
And apparently the rule for convincing a Forbes reporter of something is just to say it's been consolidated like five times.
And also, that dude fucked up by putting him on the list. Like,
right.
If he was like, well, I got this call, I mean,
so then,
I guess I'm going to have to put him on here.
So it's also like we were talking about how sad Trump is when you really look at him from just like a psychological perspective.
Right.
This is a guy who's on the phone with someone pretending to be someone else, talking about how close his dad is to him and how right. much his dad likes him.
Weren't they not close?
I think they were okay, but it's just a weird, I think yeah. his dad was a real hard ass.
Yeah. Just to underline that, he's like, I mean, they're so close. I mean, you'd think it was like a 50s comedy.
They go on
yeah.
vacation together.
It's like Leave It to Beaver.
Can you imagine, like, you'd have to be an empty shell to be able to pick up that phone.
Pretend,
you,
right, right.
Miles calling you. So I got a, listen, hot guest for your pod. Uh-huh. Look, real into what you guys are doing, Jay. I really like the moves you're making. Uh-huh. I want to recommend, this is not me, this is definitely
okay,
my client,
well,
Caitlin
Gill. Who am I speaking
you
with?
You are not talking to Caitlin Gill. Okay. That is my client. I am a representative. My name is Cal Nifna. Uh-huh. Thank you for taking my listen. I am a fabulous client.
Name.
She's just tremendous. She's huge. Uh-huh. And I mean, literally, she is 6'1", 220. She's bringing it down. Don't worry about the numbers. But those are consolidated numbers. Now, listen, what I need you to know is that Caitlin is literally the funniest person alive. You name a comedian, okay, they're probably better and more famous. But look, what you don't know yet is you don't have Caitlin on the list. You don't have her on. I am definitely not Caitlin. I am the funniest person in the world. Mm. It's just
that's when I go, yo, Jack, Caitlin just called. And
No. You hear that like from a dead phone hung up. No, it's not Caitlin. I'm not Caitlin. Put me on your podcast, please.
Also, her
listeners are so engaged. Come on.
Shout out to the Zeit Gang.
It's just the saddest.
Yeah. No, right. Yeah, to take yourself there, because it does remind you of like, we all grew up with kids in school who would just lie so aggressively.
My dad is a cop.
I did
that. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, did you?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
About the weirdest shit.
Well, kids
places
do that.
I'd been.
For sure.
Stuff my family had. Sex things I had definitely not even heard of before I made
right.
them up.
Right.
Like, I absolutely lied to make a world more interesting than my own. And then I realized that I make my world interesting.
Right. And then you grow, but then you start seeing some of those kids don't get past
they
that.
Don't.
And then they still do it. And you're like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Like, you really telling people you're a fashion designer. Like, I have friends who are still on that. I'm like, bro, you're wearing a woman's jacket.
Right.
And you'll be like, nah, this is like the new style. I'm like,
fashion designer
right,
equals shops well at the Goodwill.
Yeah.
Okay. Sure.
And then I was just like, but then you start realizing, you're like, man, like, I guess it was different. Like, you know, as a kid, you say shit, like you say, to make your own life interesting to yourself or for the perception of you to other people. But then after a while, you realize, oh, I have more control over this. I can take agency of my life or
yes.
whatever. And then you see the other people who have just relied on that for so long that they really have just completely, you know, deluded themselves into being a place like that.
But you just have to have such an empty, sucking wound where a soul would be to just be that desperate
that
to
is never
put something
enough.
In there. The Forbes 400 list, like that's he needed it.
Yeah,
like it was like he was holding his breath, and until he got on the Forbes 400 list, he couldn't take another breath. Like
but
it was just desperation.
Had $5 million. Like
Which
at the
he
time,
inherited.
He's just sad he doesn't have $100 million.
Right.
But I can't imagine that getting $100 million is going to satisfy that person.
Right.
Well,
it just is. It's sad. I'm trying to find some kind of compassion.
Right.
Because this is obviously a sad person.
Right.
He's still responsible for his actions.
Right. Now,
and what he does about that sadness.
He right. used that $100 million estimation of his wealth, which was a lie, to then start securing loans from other people because he was like, look at it.
Look, Forbes, they got me at $100 million, so
which
give
is
me 20
low,
bucks.
Obviously,
dude, that shit,
too low.
Can you walk into a bank and just slap a Forbes on a desk and be like, this is better than any formal record?
Apparently.
Yeah. When he was trying to get one of his casinos, Nick Stump, super producer, reminding us that, yes, there is a scene where they're talking about how they're worried about how he's going to secure approval from the gambling commission for one of his casinos. They're like, well, how are you going to get funding? He was just like, I'm on the Forbes list.
Right.
Don't worry about it. I'm on the. I can get that. And that perception was enough to just be like, oh, okay.
Right. And then he managed to bankrupt a bunch of casinos, which is so hard.
That
because
is very
that is
difficult.
That is a business where people walk in and give you their money and walk out.
Right.
But he managed to bankrupt them because he didn't know how to actually handle money. He just had a really bad personality disorder that caused him to, you know, constantly just build himself up to other people.
His mouth literally writes checks that his ass can't cash.
Right.
Like, he really, that is how he works.
It's a pyramid scheme.
Yeah.
But it's the bloodiest president. Yeah. Like, it's not working and it is working at the same time. Everything is a lie and he lives in the stupid White House. I don't know what to do. Like, it's fascinating.
Yeah, no,
and
we're totally fucked. Caitlin, it's been such a pleasure having you, as always. Where can people find you?
Oh, they can find me at Robot Caitlin on Twitter, at CaitlinGillComedy.com, and slowly losing my mind in the streets of Los Angeles.
But with amazing prescription eyeglasses.
So. You know, I do have some hot sunnies.
Miles, where can people find you and your hot sunnies?
You can find me and my hot non-prescription sunnies at Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray.
You can find me at Jack_O'Brien on Twitter. You can find us at Daily Zeitgeist on Twitter. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes. We link off to the information in today's episode, as well as the song that we ride out on. Miles, what are we riding out on today?
So this is crazy. I was talking about this band called the Lijadu Sisters, this Nigerian. They're these two twin sisters that are making music in like the 60s to 80s. And someone on Twitter was like, yo, play this track. So I was actually going to do that today, but a different song, not the one that my man on Twitter hit me up about. Sorry, I don't know your handle off the top of my head, but this song is by the Lijadu Sisters, and it is called Life's Gone Down Low, and they just have this like lo-fi, like post-fella, afro-funk disco thing going on. It's just, it's vibey, and they're like twins, and they're dope. Like, check out all their music. Mm. These are the Lijadu Sisters from Nigeria.
We're gonna ride out on that. We will be back tomorrow because it is a daily podcast. Talk to you guys then.
But do you know something, baby? Life's gone down low. Yeah, life's gone down low. I've been so wild and I'm so, so down low. Life's gone down low. Yeah, life's gone down. Baby, you can come and listen. We'll be right back.
only way to be free. Yeah, like.